that there are other sources of knowledge, that the human intellect is capable of deriving knowledge without using the five senses, then there is no hope in proving the existence of God. If that discussion is not open for you, there is no hope in proving the existence of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Because we know that God is not a physical being. When you're talking about the proofs for the existence of God, you're actually talking about proofs for the existence of a metaphysical being. All right? And that's been demonstrated in many of our ahadith and many of our traditions. One of the beautiful traditions that you have in front of you, so if I can just ask you to open up to page number 2, one of the most important discussions in epistemology is the truth value of prepositions and which prepositions are justified beliefs, or in other words, beliefs that conform with reality. In order to prove the existence of God, it is important to accept the truth value of prepositions which are purely intellectual and not necessarily sensorial. Science cannot prove the existence or the non-existence of God. I think we established this a month ago when we had our previous session. Science is the study of physical phenomena, their causes and their effects. Science may be required to prove the existence of God, but in and of itself is not adequate to prove the existence of God. The discussion on God is a discussion on the existence of a non-physical being. This has been captured in the traditions from the Ahlul Bayt. So for example, the sixth holy Imam, he had a companion by the name of Hisham ibn al-Hakam. So Hisham says to him, I was actually arguing with a zindiq. A zindiq is an atheist. And these were the arguments of the atheist. And the atheist said, well, if your God is not a physical being, then how can he exist? Things that exist have to be physical. The sixth Imam said to him, he is a thing with the reality of things, meaning he is a shay, okay? He exists in the corporeal world. He is not just an image that exists in my mind, but at the same time, he is not a body, nor is he a form. He cannot be experienced sensorially, nor can he be felt, nor can he be comprehended by the five senses, nor can imagination capture him. One day a man came to Amir al-Mu'mineen and said to him, can you see God? And the Imam said to him, I do not worship a Lord that I cannot see. The Imam knew when he said that this person would think that God has a physical form and a physical being. The Imam said to him, but I don't see him with my eyes, rather I see him with the reality of the heart. Okay? He's not experienced by the senses, but he is experienced by the mind. We're talking about the mind right now. And at a higher stage, he is experienced by the heart as well. However, you have to accept that there can be other forms of knowledge which do not rely on human senses. Okay? Now, of course, I don't want to get into a discussion on mantiq or a discussion on epistemology, but I do want to point out one more thing before I bring it to the main question that I have for today for you to think about and, you know, for us to discuss in the coming weeks. And that is, look, in mantiq they say, or in epistemology they say, that the primary sources of knowledge which bring about certainty, which bring about justified belief, because there are some sources of knowledge which don't bring about certainty. They bring about conjecture. They bring about, you know, doubts. They bring about possibilities. Now, we want to talk about those sources of knowledge which bring about certainty. They place them at 5 or 6. Okay, I'm going to run through them very quickly, but I want to come back to the first one because that first one will be very important for us. The first one, of course, is what are known as badihiyat or awaliyat, right? So, primary sources, which we call them to be self-evident. The second one are things which are acquired by the senses. So for example, you know, and these are all the ones I'm listing right now, they don't require further proof. They are proven by themselves. So for example, when I look outside, I see it is bright. I say it is day. Or when I look outside, I say the sun is shining. Don't ask me for a proof for that, right? This is something my eyes see. And I'm just narrating to you what my eyes see. The third one is experimental.
or if I want to say maybe empirical, tajrubiyat.
For example, every time I took a metal piece and I heated it, what happened to it? It expanded. Okay. Every time I did that, it expanded. I came to the conclusion based on empirical data that whenever you heat a piece of metal, it expands. You ask me for a proof why it expands? Well, that's what I see. It happens every time. Every time I did it, it happened. I came to the conclusion that whenever you heat a piece of metal, it expands. The fourth one is through what is known as intuitive or unanimous, mutawatirat. How many of you have been to South America? How do you know South America exists? You haven't seen it. How do you know it exists?
Everybody says so.
Everybody says so. So what if everybody says so?
What message?
Right? So, after a while, it becomes unanimous, right? One person walks in, independent people come in. One person walks in, they know there was an accident outside near the engineering building. I say, well, maybe it's true, maybe it's false, I don't know. Another person walks in, nothing to do with the first person, comes and tells me the same thing. Do you know there was an accident over there? By the time the fifth person walks in, you know, I'm pretty sure that there's an accident over there. Why? Did I see it myself? No. Did I experiment with it? No. Is it something that's self-evident to me? No, it's not. But it is because it was unanimous. Five, intuitive. There's some things that we just simply look at it and your intuition tells you, hey, this is how it's supposed to be. You know, they say Khwaja Nasiruddin At-Tusi, he built an observatory in Marava. Marava is in Turkey, okay?
In Iran.
In Iran, is it?
Yeah.
Of course, the Iranians would say it's in Iran. Is it in Iran?
North.
Yes. North Iran, okay, all right. North. So, anyways, so when I read historical texts, they mention Turkey, but I guess now it's become part of Iran. All right. So, he built it in Iran. and you know who he got to pay for the observatory, right? The Mongols, right? The Mongols that burnt down the, library in Baghdad, he got them to pay for the observatory. A very politically astute person. So, Khwaja Nasiruddin Tusi, it is said, for example, from the observatory, when he would look out at sea, right, or from somewhere else, I'm not sure if it was from the observatory now or from somewhere else, he would look out at sea, he would notice that when the ships were coming in, first you could see their mast, then slowly you started seeing the bottom of the body, and then you saw the hull of the body, right? And he realized from that it would seem that the earth is curved and the earth is not flat. Because if the earth was flat, when the ships came in, you would see the ship, the entire ship, small, and then as it came closer, you'd see the whole ship. But when he looked out, he didn't see it that way. He saw the mast first, and then he saw the rest of the ship, and he realized it is having a curvature, and it's coming up. Now, he came to the conclusion, or it is said he came to the conclusion, that the earth had a curvature. What was that based on? Did he experiment it? No, he didn't experiment it. Did he sense it? Well, sensing is not enough to come up with that conclusion, right? It was intuitive. And the last thing is known as fitriyat, or things which are innate. There is a difference between things which are innate and things which are self-evident. I don't want to get lost in that discussion, all right? Now, coming back to things which are self-evident, awwaliyat, right? These are prepositions. When you look at these prepositions, you realize that I don't need any further argument to understand the truth value of these prepositions. I verify these prepositions, right? By looking at the subject and looking at the predicate, you accept the preposition. For example, the whole is always greater than its parts. Do you have an argument for that? No, you don't have an argument for that. You know it is self-evident to you that the whole always has to be greater than its parts. Or, for example, the law of contradictories. You know what the law of contradictories is? Two opposite contradictory arguments cannot both be right at the same time from the same sense or from the same perspective, right? Do you have an argument for that? No, you don't have an argument for that. It is something
by
which is...
definition.
By definition, it's self-evident. You simply have to think about it. Think of the subject, think of the predicate, and the rest just falls into place. Doesn't need any other argument for it. Or, for example, the fact that the simplest form of a qiyas, of a syllogism, gives you the right answer, and you can accept that answer. Do I have an argument for that? I don't have an argument for that, but it is self-evident to me that the answer, the conclusion that you draw from it, is a correct conclusion. All right. Now, one of the arguments for the existence of God, and I'm just, my discussion for today has come to an end.